Good morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central on CheeseheadTV.com. I'm your host, Brian Caravu, and this morning we're wrapping up a Green Bay Packers season, but more importantly, looking forward to the future. And we're talking about the NFL Draft and the College All-Star Games this morning. And joining us on the phone, we have joining us live, Pigskin Paul Guillemette of PigskinPaul.com, of the Great Blue North Draft Report, and the Cheesehead TV's NFL Draft Guide. Paul, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Brian. Doing fine. It's a nice sunny day in Florida again, and football is in the air.
Very good. And while I butter you up a little bit before we get to our interview, I should remind that Paul's one of the premier NFL draft analysts out there. His top 100 list of players last year was the best of any NFL draft analyst, except for the esteemed Rick Goslin of the Dallas, what is he, the Morning News? But anyway, I think that's such a nice accomplishment, and we're glad to be having your writing in our Cheesehead TV draft guide.
Well, I'm pleased to be part of it, and as the saying goes, the pressure's on to repeat, right? You enjoy your victory momentarily, and then you think, oh boy, what do I do to top this one?
Exactly. Let's get right to it. I've been hearing a lot about cornerback Josh Norman of Coastal Carolina this week. He seems to be the one player everybody's raving about at the East-West Shrine Game practices. What can you tell me about Josh Norman?
I think Josh Norman is deserving of a lot of praise for his work. One would assume that because he's a small school guy, relatively speaking, that you would have some coaching upside of a considerable nature with him. And I think he is indeed rising up the draft boards quickly. Let's put it this way. I will confess, I had him on a short list to possibly add to my regardless list, which I try to limit to 350 players, since they only draft 56. So I didn't come here totally unprepared for a guy like Josh Norman, but I must confess, I came totally unprepared to see somebody from a school that size with his apparent athleticism and his understanding of the cornerback position. I think I'll throw in one little caveat. I think that whoever gets him, and I think they will clearly understand that, will have to be prepared to live with the good and the bad for a while. And Josh Norman, which I think contributes greatly to his performance, is a very confident young man. So I think you know what that means I'm going to say next. There are times where he's not exactly assignment sure. He goes with his instincts as to what's going to happen on the field. And that will be something that obviously will drive most NFL coaching staffs completely out of their mind for a while. But talent-wise, I'm just going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say to you, if this kid had spent 4 years in the Big Ten or the SEC, and he certainly has the talent to compete in those leagues, I think he would be indeed a top 100 player, if not a top 50 player. He has done an excellent job. He's got good size. He's got good quickness. He has natural instincts. I'm guessing that if he's 100% healthy, he will run very well in the 40 and put up a nice time that the scouts will be happy with. And it's for all the world that I think part of it is because of the team helmet that he wears and the fact that here in practice he's wearing number 31. But he, for all the world, size-wise and attitude-wise, looks like Rasheen Mathis, currently of the Jaguars.
Well,
Mathis has had a nice career.
That confidence, as you call it, or maybe cockiness. The NFL can tend to bring him down a peg. I think those rookies that come in and all of a sudden they're not the top dog anymore, and they're getting beat routinely by NFL wide receivers in training camp.
Yes, that you're exactly right. He's going to get love for the next 2 months or so, 2.5 months. And the minute that he is drafted, the love is going to turn into the school of hard knocks.
Another player that's turning heads this week, Akeem Hicks of Canada, a defensive lineman who you wrote in one of your draft reports at the Great Blue North draft report that one of the better prospects coming out of Canada in some time. What do you know about him?
Yes, well, I found out a little bit more. I happened to be standing at lunch the other day chatting with an agent, a player agent from Canada. And my comment to him was, boy, you guys must be, as an agent, whoever's got him must be happy, but the CFL teams must be heartbroken that the NFL has now discovered Akeem Hicks, and you know he's obviously quite the specimen. It turns out that it's not that big a deal up in Canada. Akeem Hicks is from the States, and he had a brief stay at LSU as a freshman and ran into some unspecified difficulties and left school. Well, in the 4 years that he's been away and up at the University of Regina in Canada, and doesn't that sound like something out of an Austin Powers movie? He has indeed developed into a 6'4" plus 325-pound defensive lineman who, personally, looking at him, Brian, I would say he could play, I think potentially he could play any position other than nose tackle on the defensive line. I think he could line up inside or outside in a 4-3 scheme, and I think he can play the 5 technique in a 3 scheme. He's got good push. He's got long arms. I think, like you would expect from a kid from a Canadian school or a small college, and that's really what this boils down to. If these kids come from a Canadian college, it's just like a Josh Norman coming from a Division II or a Division III school here in the States. Chances are they haven't had the training facilities advantages that kids at LSU and Alabama have had, obviously, and quite frankly, they haven't had the coaching advantages. So you have to assume with a kid like Hicks, with a kid like Norman, and this is where the personnel people get into battles with the coaches on an NFL team, upside versus reality. And so a player like Akeem Hicks is looking good down here. He looks dominant at times. At other times, he gets his lunch handed to him, so it's not like he's walking on a cloud thinking he's God's gift to football. But, you know, the personnel people are looking, and they're drooling because of his size and his athleticism. And in my mind, I can hear some of the coaches who are back in the film room, and they're saying, oh, my God, look at that technique. Look at the way he doesn't move his, you know, oh, boy, are we going to have a lot of work to do with this kid before he's really ready to play. So I think you have that yin and yang that's always there between personnel departments and scouting staffs, which I'll digress for a second, then I'll move on to your next question. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that I personally think killed the Mike Sherman regime in Green Bay. In the sense that you remember when they drafted Jamal Reynolds, that was Mike, supposedly the story goes, Ron Wolf was disheartened because his guy was gone, and Mike Sherman and a couple of his coaches started talking for the next 5 minutes, and Ron Wolf just finally said, okay, take Jamal Reynolds, take your guy, and we all know what a disaster that turned out to be.
Yes, absolutely. Let's let's go with a little bit of a local angle here. Obviously, we have a lot of listeners from Wisconsin, seeing as this is mostly a Green Bay Packers talk show. But one of the players from the University of Wisconsin, Aaron Henry, is at the Shrine game this week. And I just want to get your impressions on him. You know, I'm kind of the guy who does the safeties work at the Cheesehead TV Draft Guide, and that kind of interests me a lot, being a former safety. But anyway, I like Aaron Henry, but I just think he's average. And I really thought those Hail Marys that the Wisconsin Badgers got beat on, I wouldn't say the one against Ohio State was really a Hail Mary, but two late passes, that I thought he was kind of absent on, had turned me off a little bit. What do you think about Aaron Henry, and how's he doing down there?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm glad you brought Aaron up, because obviously knowing that I speak on the air and have a lot of people checking my site that are Wisconsinites as well, I always watch for the Badgers, and obviously I'm excited at the number of Badgers that are going to be in Mobile next week. But I would say to you, Brian, I said on a Wisconsin radio station 3 weeks ago, in a direct answer to a question, I wasn't convinced that Aaron Henry was going to be draftable come April.
Mm-hmm.
I do think he'll be on an NFL roster and in a training camp next year. Well, I'll be honest with you, after this week in Mobile, I'm caught in between where I am and where I'm going. This week in St. Pete, I would have to tell you, he's still not a premier player, but I definitely think he is draftable, and I think a couple of things that are really helping him, and you know these because I know you well enough, you've already started your research. Being a former cornerback, he's got a little bit of technique and a little bit of knowledge that a lot of safeties don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So that plays to his advantage, and you can see that down here. He's getting an awful lot of coaching during the practices, but it is in the very positive vein. They like some of what he does. They have him calling some of the defensive signals down here. They are very patient when they correct him and point out some of his errors or his misjudgments. So I think there's an air down here that Aaron Henry is a late round draftable safety with some NFL potential. And the other thing that I hear, Brian, that's helping him tremendously is, I think, what most of us heard who follow the Badgers. He's a highly coachable kid. He's a good influence in a locker room. He's not a troublemaker. And he probably can find a spot for him in any special team unit that your team has. And the question becomes, how much does an NFL coaching staff think they can develop to trust him and put him out on the field? Yesterday, during the final scrimmage of the West squad, he had a very nice interception in traffic in the short field coming up to cut off a little dink and dunk screen pass. And he was right on the ball, had no trouble holding on to it, and was gone like a burst of lightning towards the end zone. So I would say to you, he's a middle-of-the-road prospect now.
Yeah, that's kind of what I felt all along, certainly. The qualities of leadership really, really help him. But, you know, not an elite guy by any means, kind of as you say, a late-round type of guy. Anyhow, let's kind of go a little bit more rapid-fire here. I just got a couple guys with questions on. Sticking with the defensive backfield, I saw you had mentioned San Jose State safety Duke Iheanacho as a not NFL-ready prospect, which just caught my attention a little bit because I think I've seen a lot of reports that thought he was, maybe not, again, an elite guy, but a guy who could be drafted at least. But just impressions on him.
Priority free agent, I think, at this stage, maybe a late draftee. I think the key here, Brian, is, and you know this happens, I think he's a victim of a bad injury, and he just has never, at least to this stage, he still has not completely recovered his quickness and his leg strength from, I think it was a serious knee injury offered back in 2010. He played in 2011. He played most of the time. He missed parts of games, limping off the field. He's just not 100% healthy, and he's not 100% the guy that he was 2 years ago. And that's why I put him on that list. I just have a bad feeling that at best he might be ready in another year, but my gut's starting to tell me that this may be something where, despite modern medical science, he's just never going to come back to be the player he was.
I gotcha. You made comparisons to a couple current players on the Packers team. Nicholas Jean-Baptiste of Baylor, you said he reminded you of B.J. Raji. What do you see there?
I see a poor man's B.J. Raji. He does not have B.J.'s overall athleticism by a long shot. But what I see is, you know, a guy that's just over 6 feet tall. You know, Baptiste is 6'1", and he weighs 330. So, you know, if you draw a rough equation with BJ being 6'2", and maybe, what, 350 when he's in reasonable shape, or 340, the similarity is there. The difference that I see is that I'm not convinced Baptiste has the strength to play the pure nose position, but the three things I like about Jean-Baptiste are the fact that he has that incredibly wide base, which, as I explained to my daughter, who's a football fan, the other day, that means he's got a big butt. He has a wide base. He is a very diligent, hard-working kind of player. He never gives up. And I think the thing I like best about him, Brian, is he has very strong hands and uses them well against blockers. His arms aren't incredibly long because he's short. But let's just say, if this were the NFL 15 years ago before they got rid of the head slap, Baptiste, I think, would be rated much higher, because I can tell you right now, lined up against him, some offensive centers would have bells ringing before the first quarter is over in their heads. That's what I like about him.
Another guy, Mississippi State center Quentin Salisbury, you said reminds you of Scott Wells, and I have to assume it has to do in part because of size.
It's everything, yes. It's size. It's willingness to do whatever. You know, it's understanding where you at. The game, Brian, one of the big issues that scouts have, and sometimes it's the premier players, but sometimes it's not, is, you know, most of these kids think they're better than they are. And it takes an NFL training camp to bring them down to earth. I guarantee you, Quentin Salisbury has no delusions as to who he is. You know, he's a slightly undersized, relatively short-armed interior offensive lineman. Now, if that isn't a description of Scott Wells, I give up. And he just works his butt off. He'll get beaten badly on one play, and you can just see that it's not that he's denying he got beaten, but you can see that by the time he's back in the huddle, that's gone from his memory bank, and it's on to the next play. I also like the fact that And Wells didn't do much of this, and this works to Salisbury's advantage. In my opinion, it'll be a slam dunk that Quentin Salisbury will be able to back up all three of the interior line positions. And he was willing to do that at Mississippi State, which I think also plays to his. So I'm saying both physically and mental makeup, he reminds me of a hardworking, overachieving Scott Wells.
Another player who kind of has caught my attention in several reports from the Shrine game from multiple people, Josh Kedu of Oregon, a guy who played defensive line at Oregon, kind of being looked at as a 3-4 outside linebacker in the pros. Obviously, the Packers have a need for a 3-4 outside linebacker. Is this the kind of guy who can play in a 2-point stance, and what have you seen from him?
I personally don't see him back in a 2-point stance at an NFL level, but what I do see from him, and it is impressive, is that he is a really, and I think, let me backtrack, Brian, I think he had some some off and on injury issues during the 2010 season for Oregon and at the beginning of the 2011 season. He missed games, he missed plays, he missed quarters, and we really didn't get to see him at his physical prime. If you go back and you watch the Oregon games starting, you know, maybe game 9 of the season, and if you go back, unfortunately, and watch the tape against Wisconsin, you will see a kid who is all over the field. And what I like is you will see a kid who somehow, when he finds the ball carrier, just unloads on them. The pads just pop. No, they don't pop. They pop when the regular players hit. The pads explode when Josh could do. They had to tell him a couple of times to tone it down this week because of hits that he was putting on receivers and tight ends. So, let's face it, you can always use more of those guys. I think he would be dynamite on special teams. I think, you know, he could fit into a rotation very nicely in a 3-4 scheme like the Packers run. And I think at this stage you can still get a value on this kid because given the underclassmen that came out and the number of skill players there were and how highly ranked I think the underclassmen are this year, I think a guy like Josh Kadu, who should be a top 100 player on a pure scale, might even slide, but he's there late in that third round when the Packers pick, or even in the fourth round when they pick. Mm-hmm. I like him. I like him a lot. He's looked good down here, and he's one of the guys that I am anxious to see. Don't believe these people that tell you the game doesn't count. That's BS. The game counts because that's when the guys that really like to hit show up and play football. Mm-hmm. And I got a funny feeling that Josh Kadu is going to be highly noticeable Saturday afternoon.
One last question before we let you go, Paul. Of course, General Manager Ted Thompson has been in the St. Petersburg area this week.
Yes, he has. He came in Tuesday.
What have you seen from Ted Thompson? Can you glean anything from what he might be watching, or just anything related that you might have caught your attention this week at all?
Well, I can tell you, and this won't surprise you, and it's certainly understandable that Ted was, Ted is really well known in the industry. He knows all the guys. They all know him. I think I've said this before in every venue I'm on. You know, his nickname really is Whitey because the guys that coached him, played against him in the NFL, that's his nickname. And I'll tell you what, Whitey was more subdued than I've ever seen him this Tuesday of this week. As the week went on, and this might surprise people because, he is so camera shy, so to speak, when it comes to the press conferences and such. But I'll tell you what, when you get him down here with his peers and over at the Senior Bowl next week, and he doesn't hesitate at all to trade barbs with the guys he knows or shout out, a little dig at somebody across the field. I saw that coming out on Wednesday and Thursday. Hard to get a feel, and it usually is, hard to get a feel on exactly who and what he was looking at, Brian. Mm-hmm. I will say this. It struck me that as opposed to other times that I've watched him, and there have been years where I just kind of trailed around after him for an hour or so, I felt that he spent less time with any specific group of players than I ever have in the past, and just made sure that he got around to watching everybody and every position group out there. I mean, he was watching quarterbacks and running backs for good lengths of time. And what do I read into it? I guess I'll just read into it perhaps that maybe he still doesn't feel, and especially, let me backtrack, especially at a game like this, the Shrine game, we're not going to have anybody drafted in the first round. I don't think there's going to be anybody drafted in the second round. I'm going to kind of work on an article for that this afternoon and get it up on my site and gpnreport.com. But it tells me that what he's really saying is he's sticking to his theory that He's here at the Shrine Week, and this game is predominantly populated by fourth round and up players. Maybe a few guys are going to sneak in the third round. And he's getting a look at everybody, because you know what? He's going to go back to his basic philosophy, at least in the mid to late rounds. We're drafting the best available athlete, and in case of a tie, it'll be at a position of need. I'm guessing, Brian, there'll be a little more. I'll be watching him more closely to see if he sticks around a certain position group more next week in Mobile, where you have a lot more guys that are going to be drafted in the top 100. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate you joining us here on Railbird Central, and have fun as you're off to Mobile in the Senior Bowl next week.
Oh, I will. I always do, my friend. And if you need me or want me, next Friday's walkthrough day at the Senior Bowl, and I should have plenty of notes and plenty of time. So I'm wide open if you need me. Just send me an email.
Sounds good. I'll touch base with you, Paul. Thanks again, and we'll see you later.
Thanks for having me, buddy. Take care.
Yep, you too. See ya. Paul Guillemette of PigskinPaul.com, the Great Blue North Draft Report, and Cheesehead TV's own NFL Draft Guide, joining us here on Railbird Central. Joining us for what is the majority of the episode this morning here on Railbird Central, and that's all right. I mean, I just love listening to Paul talk, because he's such a wealth of knowledge. I mean, there's not too many people out there that can speak at length to mid-round draft choices and late-round draft choices and even undrafted guys here at the Shrine Game, guys who are on the fringe of the NFL. But when you're a draftnik like me and you like to watch the NFL draft in its entirety, and you're interested in the guys at the end of the roster and things like that, undrafted guys who are signed by the Packers and elsewhere, it really is interesting to me, and I love it. So he's fantastic, and it's great to get his insight. And it's right now, it's All-Star Game season, and now with the Packers season over, this is what we've got to talk about, the future. The Shrine Game is this week. Actually, it's to a lesser extent. There's you really got to be a hardcore draft nick, but there's three All-Star Games going on this week. The Shrine Game is the most popular of them and has been around for the longest time. Name people know. But also, there's the Battle of Florida going on this week that some NFL scouts are at. And there's the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl this week out in Los Angeles that's taking place as well. So, Packers scouts are at these things looking for the next draft class for the Green Bay Packers. Next week, it's the Senior Bowl in Mobile, and that's, of course, the elite game where the best players are, the guys who are going to be drafted in the first and second round. So that's always of interest as well. So, it really is fun now at this time of year, kind of looking forward to that if you're a fan of the Green Bay Packers. Normally here on Railbird Central, we kind of go through a lot of the headlines here going on with the Green Bay Packers. And I guess just I wanted to mention briefly before we went off air here, the one headline that's dominating today, JerMichael Finley and his agent were talking to the media yesterday and said a couple things. First of all, JerMichael Finley is looking for a long-term contract. So that's kind of what we're looking for. And that doesn't come as a surprise, obviously. I think every NFL free agent would prefer a long-term contract. And also on top of that they are not interested in the franchise tag. They want to avoid it. But if they do, they're going to go with the wide receiver route in terms of JerMichael Finley. He doesn't want to be tagged as a tight end because basically you're looking at the tight end tag franchise number somewhere in the realm of $5.5 million for a season, and the franchise tag for a wide receiver is somewhere in the realm of $9.5 million per season. So there's a $4 million difference between the two. And you know, Jermichael Finley obviously would, and anybody, not just Jermichael Finley, you know, if you get to choose, obviously you'd choose the higher amount. You can't really blame him for like wanting that, seeing as he, you know, does play a wide receiver position quite often. And I don't think Jermichael Finley is worth $9.5 million per season. But, you know, it's one of these things where perhaps the Packers and him come to some sort of middle ground and, you know, kind of come to some sort of agreement somewhere in the middle. I'm thinking more towards the tight end tag. We're talking $6 million a season, maybe up nearing seven. You know, getting above that's quite a bit, I think. And I don't know how much the Packers want to go above that. That is, you know, that's dicey, and that's putting a lot of money into a player who's a lot of people think is on the outside the top 10 of NFL tight ends, not in the top 10 players. I think he can be. Again, I've mentioned this before on Twitter. I think one of the things that really had struck me was an article from Jason Wilde of ESPNMilwaukee.com saying that Jermichael Finley is 24 years old, which is the same age as rookie tight end Ryan Taylor. Of course, Jermichael Finley came out as an underclassman rather early and, you know, joined the NFL, and he really still is young and immature. And there is a lot of good years of Jermichael Finley ahead, and I think that's his most positive quality. And a lot of people point to his drops, but again, you got to put Jermichael Finley's whole career in perspective. He had been with the Packers for 4 years now, and only in about the past month, the last month or so of the season, were drops really an issue? Maybe the past last month and a half of the season. Prior to that, for 3.5 years, three and a half plus years, drops weren't a problem for Jermichael Finley. So, I mean, yes, they were problematic late in the season, no doubt about it. Nobody liked to see him, least of all Jermichael Finley, but you know, they had not been a problem for so long. So I think that's why he does come back with the Packers. I mean, that's a guess. I can certainly be wrong, have been before. But that's what I see happening. So anyhow, it's already past 9 o'clock here this morning. Thanks, everybody, so much for joining us here on Railbird Central this morning. Make sure to come back for our coverage of the Packers all week long, all the time at our blog. And for John Rahor, for Jamie Drawers joining us this morning on the live blog, our live blog directors, thank you for joining us. And we will see you later. We'll see you Monday here on Railbird Central. I leave you today with a song called Freaker by the Speaker by Keller Williams on Psy Fidelity Records. See everyone. Go Pack. Go. Human Trader.